Most definitely, it's a wonderful Saturday morning. It's time to have a major conversation with regards to water and what it can and cannot do for us if we mistreat water. It will end up mistreating us in some sort of way. Today on Public Square, our special focus is on water, sanitation, hygiene, and this will be the first part of our six special series that we'll be holding during this very important time. We'll be talking about maternal, child, adolescent health. Yes, very, very important. Mothers are pregnant, 9 months of waiting, and then the child comes along. How do you care for the child? What do you do? What are some of the challenges in the environment that may be a threat to the child? So we'll look at maternal, child, and adolescent health, which will feature to a large extent. And our Nigerian partners of the Global Partnership for Maternal and Child Health will join us during this six-day period that will run from today, Saturday, from 10 to 11. And of course, you won't want to miss out on the special edition that would also run from 1 to 2 o'clock Monday through Friday this week, this new week that we're going on to. That's Monday 30th now. So we'll run this to end August at the start of September, 1 to 2 o'clock Monday through Friday it will be, but the first edition of this will be this Saturday. On today's edition of the program, as we talk about water and how it affects maternal, child, and adolescent health, Rotimi Sakura joins me, of course, as a development journalist with lots of experience, and he will provide us with picture, even provide insight and data with regards to issues that will help us understand issues around water. And we would raise questions, we would answer. I mean, we would interact extensively about the situation of water across the country and even here in the FCT. So, by the way, just to mention to you as well, it is the World Water Week. World Water Week. That's a WWW. Yeah. This very week. While we're celebrating World Water Week, one of the biggest waterborne diseases that one could ever imagine that affects Africans, and even and the way it is going now, it's major in Nigeria, is the fact that we have cholera outbreak in Nigeria. In the last 6 months, the stories have gone on and on and on, and there are a lot to even wonder about. Combining that with the doctor strike, you can only start to imagine the stories documented and the lives lost that have not been talked about. Well, let's go on to this conversation extensively now. Rotimi Sakura joins me via the telephone line. Good morning to you, sir.
Morning, Femi.
Good to have you joining. Happy World Water Week.
Well, I mean, if we can say happy Nigeria, given the topic we are about to discuss, and some of what will inevitably be sad reflections on the state of water, sanitation, and hygiene in Nigeria. I mean, you just mentioned the ongoing cholera outbreak, which, it's been raging now for about 7 months, in part because of a combination of lack of access to water, lack of access to sanitation and hygiene facilities, and in particular, well over 50 million people that are still forced to engage in open defecation. So, I mean, in such circumstances, I mean, we observe and commemorate the World Water Week. Can we say Happy World Water Week in Nigeria? I'm not sure.
Maybe we'll just go with the happy rain. The rains looks like it's not going to end. But rain give good water. And I do know one of the things to even talk about when it comes to water is it comes from different sources based on locations. The way the northwest, northeast, the southeast, south, all get access to water is almost literally different. And that also means the quality of the water they get. And it also means the type of disease that they may be susceptible to also having. I mean, this is Nigeria that we're talking about, different issues at different times. But before we go into water and Nigeria extensively, let's talk about Just a brief overview now of the importance of water, sanitation and hygiene, and how the impact on the life of mothers, maternal and child health care, and even adolescents in Nigeria, which are always known and have remained very vulnerable groups in Nigeria. Let's hear from you on that.
In summary, the overview is that water, sanitation, and hygiene are not just a prerequisite for good health, but also contribute greatly to livelihoods, economic growth, school attendance, and human dignity. I mean, we talked about open defecation at the beginning of the program. Over 50 million Nigerians still forced to engage in open defecation. If you want to look at specifics for, say, child health, newborn and maternal health, then the issues essentially are that, so in Nigeria, for instance, Nigeria has, in fact, an absurd level of child mortality under 5. I mean, Nigeria's child mortality is right at the top of the global table. And I think, as we discussed when we were doing the special Nigeria at 60 series, Nigeria's child mortality has now overtaken that of India. And when you consider that India has 1.3 billion people and Nigeria has just over 200 million people, but our under 5 mortality is higher than theirs, then you can see the scale of the problem that we are facing here, losing about just under 1 million children under the age of 5 every year, in a large part due to waterborne diseases like diarrhea. And diarrhea specifically is the second leading cause of death of children under the age of 5. Mm. So you can see the impact this has, not just on the general community, but on children especially. Now, speaking more broadly for water, sanitation, and hygiene in relation to, say, newborn and maternal health. Infections associated with unclean baths account for about 26% of newborn deaths and about 11% of maternal mortality. So completely avoidable. Your pregnancy is not a sickness. It's a natural biological process, but 11% of women giving birth die because of unclean circumstances, poor water, sanitation, and hygiene, and about a quarter of children, bearing in mind that when we say a quarter of children, this is a quarter of over 7 million children born a year die due to unclean circumstances of their bath. No water to wash, poor hygiene and sanitation. I mean, it's a real tragedy for mothers and children.
And it brings in a lot of questions as regards, the situations where they have to give birth from either at home or public places and the public institutions, that health institutions, which they have to, consider all that they have to do. I mean, let's talk about child health, for example, diarrhea. I mean, it's one of the things that really gets to newborn more than ever before. You also talked about that under the age of 5, infections that come due to unclean death. These are things to emphasize around more than ever before. But what does the data tell us about the state of water, sanitation, and hygiene in Nigeria in itself? What does the data say about this? What can we look at and say, okay, we're safe, we're not safe, or we're just really in trouble? Because essentially, it looks like we're always in trouble for one thing or the other.
Before we talk about the data, just a quick shout out to Dr. Yemi Kale, the immediate past statistician general of the country. I think of all the civil servants we have had in the last decade or so, I think he's just done incredibly well. I mean, for the most part of his being in that office, I mean, I've not been in Nigeria. As you know, I just, you know, I returned to Nigeria recently for about 2 decades abroad. But nevertheless, I mean, from anywhere I was and for everybody in Nigeria, I think we should thank and acknowledge him. It's not always, it's not all the time that civil servants do their work as it should be done under difficult circumstances. So shout out to Dr. Kale and indeed all the staff at the Bureau of Statistics. Okay, so, I mean, let's look at what the data actually tells us. So, I mean, bear in mind, first of all, our population, well over 200 million, 206 million at the end of last year. And if you want to go by the global population clock, which counts every day, about 211 million as of this morning. So, it's important to have that at the front of your mind as we are talking about percentages and so forth. So, first of all, on a state-by-state basis, in terms of just access to water, just water now, not even sanitation and hygiene as a whole, 28 out of 36 states plus FCT, so that's 37 territories, have some form of urban facility or the other that is supposed to produce safe and clean water. 28 out of 36 and the FCT. So, in other words, there are 9 states that have no urban production of safe or clean water. Note that there are 9 states that have no capacity to produce safe or clean water for their citizens. So when you say cholera outbreak, that is one of the reasons why. Now, of the 28 states that have some capacity, only 16 have actually functional urban facilities, so in that produce water. So in other words, less than half of the states in Nigeria have any capacity to supply safe water. So 28 have water works of some kind or the other, but only 16 have functional water works of one kind or the other. Not complete coverage for everybody of some kind or the other. So that gives you a scale of the kind of problem that we are facing. And in all of all the states that have some kind of water works or the other, only 42% are functional. So you see how it goes from those that have none to those that have some, and out of those that have some, only 42% of the water works are functional, less than half for over 200 million people. You see what the scale of the problem is. So, you know, that's regarding general availability. Now, at the beginning, you said something about the different parts of Nigeria getting their water in different ways. So about 40% of all the water works are fed by groundwater, and about 48% by surface water or other sources. But remember, Femi, that when we are talking about Nigeria at 60 and the maximizing of water resources either for water sanitation and hygiene, or for power, hydro power, or for industrial use and so forth. Remember something that I mentioned at the time when I said that the distance from water on its own should not be a major problem, because there are big cities globally that get their water from sources that are 100 or 200 miles away. And I mentioned cities like Las Vegas,
yes,
for instance. So this just has to do with planning. It just has to do with planning, that's all. And then the policy and investment that is required to be able to make it work. Which takes us very smoothly to the next issue, which is, what is the economic impact? So when you have a scenario in which the water is not available, and people on, for instance, minimum wage of 30,000 naira a month or less have to spend about 100 naira on water every day, just let's say 100. So that is roughly 3,000 a month. So 10% of the income of many Nigerians goes on providing water. I mean, that is absurd. That is a recipe for poverty. There is no developed country on this planet, and I have lived and worked and traveled in many, where citizens spend 10% of their income on water. That is a straight recipe for poverty. So when we say 100 million Nigerians are living in extreme poverty, I mean, the data says are living in extreme poverty, this is part of the problem. So, big picture, total wash expenditure in 2018-2019 in Nigeria was 3.3 trillion naira. In other words, roughly a quarter of the country's budget was spent by individuals, I mean roughly equivalent, was spent by households on water, sanitation, and hygiene. And 98.7% of that was on recurrent costs. So it gives you an idea, really, of what the big gaps and deficits are. And out of that, 1.2 trillion was spent specifically on water. At that time, equivalent to about $4 billion. So it really gives you a big idea of the investment gaps, the policy gaps, and what Nigerians are suffering, and what the potential could be, how much more better the economic situation could be in terms of, say, disposable income, if Nigerians did not have to spend billions of naira out of pocket to buy pure water and bottled water, which, by the way, has a negative impact. Because in most of the cities, say Lagos, for instance, which is the most populated, about 20 million citizens buying several bottles of water and sachets every day and disposing, say, 60 to 80 million pieces of plastic and sachets without any recycling means. 60 to 80 million pieces going into the drainage and everything, which means after 1 or 2 hours of rain, there is flood, which in turn worsens again the water sanitation and hygiene situation. So it becomes a vicious cycle. And please keep in mind that Nigeria's population is set to double by 2050 to about 400 million. So all this is about to get worse unless the necessary investment is made now. Now, not tomorrow, now. So that's the summary on general availability and economic impact.
And it also brings about, I mean, as you explained the economic impact, I also remember that at the start of this month, August now, there was also talk about the water bill, the one that became controversial. The Minister of Water Resources advocating about what control of water basins and the rivers that flow through state and how all that would be domicile and Aldo creates for communities and the likes of that. But let's talk about water in public spend places as we have it now. And, you know, as he argued about who should control where, you know, who leads the water discussions and where water control, and, you know, if you're channeling, if you're getting loans from foreign economies and the likes of that, who controls what with regards to water, brings forward the question about, so let's talk about on access to water now, which is another factor now. When you think about the urban areas, people say, oh, it runs through the pipe to get to our homes. The rural areas have another thing to deal with, and there must be some sort of data that explains access to water as we have it in public places, and why there's scarcity of it, if there's any, and why we have not so clean water in some places. And in some places, there's no even water at all to be considered to be accessible to anybody in need of it in public places.
Hmm. I mean, this the absence of poor availability of water, sanitation and hygiene in public places is a tragedy in our country. It's a real tragedy. And let's note that this is one of the reasons why Nigeria has the fifth lowest life expectancy on the planet. Fifth lowest life expectancy out of 196 countries. I mean, that is how bad it is. So we are not talking of something that does not have consequence.
Mm.
It has consequence, especially on poor people. So let's look at the most public of public places. Market places and motor parks, for instance. So only about 27% of market and motor park have access to basic water supply. Just about a quarter. I mean, this is a tragedy by any means. And this underlines something. It underlines that the local governments are failing or have failed in their obligation to citizens. Because as we always say, there are a lot of problems in the country. Not all those problems are federal government problems.
Mm.
A lot of those problems are state and federal government problems. The real tragedy at the federal level is that the federal level does not then demonstrate leadership. So in this case, for instance, we have a federal minister for water resources. Given just the summary data we looked at the beginning, you would think that the Federal Minister for Water Resources would have summoned all the commissioners for water to an emergency meeting when this government first came into office to say, okay, guys, you know, we are not all from the same party, but we are from the same country. And this is the data that we are looking at, both from the Bureau of Statistics and from development agencies like the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and so forth. So according to the data, this is what it is in your state, this is what it is in your state, this is what it is in your state. This is the proposed federal government budget for water resources and water management, water for hydro power, water for industrial use, water for drinking, sanitation and hygiene. To bridge the gap, this is what your state needs to do. And you, in turn, in your state, then need to go to the local governments and convey all the local government chairs and the councillors responsible for water. I don't know if people realize that the way local governments are supposed to be run, they are supposed to have a kind of cabinet where there is a councillor you can identify and say this one is in charge of water, this one is in charge of education. I hope people know all that. So if the federal demonstrates the leadership and does that with the state commissioners, the state commissioners will then be given marching orders or prompted to do the same with local government. Then we can see progress. Without that, all that is going to happen is that people will just trouser the money. So every year, billions will be allocated to water, and every year, billions will disappear. In fact, I make bold to say that the water sector is one of the places with the most stupendous amount of corruption, because you don't see the output of the water resources anywhere.
Mm.
So when you have a situation where only 27% of market and, you know, motor park, the most public of public places, have water supply, I mean, this is the kind of overview that you are looking at. And in terms of sanitation, it is roughly the same. Only about a quarter have access to basic sanitation services. Slightly better in the urban area, 35%. In the rural area, 14%. And when it comes to hygiene, it's even more tragic, because market is where people buy food. So only 5% of market and motor park have access to basic hygiene services. 5%. There is a 95% deficit of hygiene in market and motor park. I mean, how much more bad can it get? And only 1 in 10 market and motor parks have provision for hand washing facilities. How much more bad can it get? The place where millions gather every day, the place where food for millions is exchanged every day, only 1 in 10 markets have any provision for hand washing. So you can see where the problem comes. And in fact, when you are looking in terms of responsibility, only about 38% of market and motor park have any committee that is even designated to say, okay, you are in charge. Something which local government should be checking every week. Does your market have a committee in charge of water, sanitation, and hygiene? But the local governments don't do it, the states don't do it, because they themselves have not made the investment. So they don't have the audacity to go to the market to ask them, who is managing your water, sanitation, and hygiene in this market? The market people have to themselves, you know, sort that out. So, I mean, this is the kind of scenario that we are facing. And just lastly, on this market and motor park, only 21% have improved access to toilets. 21%. So, all those people you see in market every day, roughly 80% of them are doing open defecation in and around the market. In and around the market. So, again, note what I said. Nigeria has the 5th lowest life expectancy in the world. So, all these things have consequences. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the gender consideration for it, because women and men have different needs, menstruation and so forth like that, only 2% of public places even remember that half of the population are women. Only 2%. And this is what happens when there is no structure, no governance, no policy, and no investment. Gender just falls off the table completely. Really sad.
It is sad. I mean, it's really sad when you think about what all these numbers mean. By the way, if you're just joining in, we're talking about water sanitation and hygiene, how it affects Montana child and adolescent right here this very morning. If you're just joining in, but it's also very important to state clearly that this week, this new week that we're going on to, is World Water Week, okay? World Water Week. And yes, this conversation is very important to every one of us to understand our role and the difference we can make by, you know, understanding how things are really changing. And Rotary Sakori is taking us through the big picture, some of the key data that will formulate the situation of things at a time when Nigeria in itself is dealing with cholera outbreak that's lasted 6 to 7 months now. And also during this very period where you think about COVID-19, and I don't know which of the additions of COVID-19 American to call it now, whether the COVID-19 one or the COVID-19 Delta that there is to deal with, water is required at marketplaces for you to clean your hands. But what happens when there's no water in those public places, in toilets and in all those places where germs, you know, really can go on and be passed on to other people? It leaves you with so much to even understand. And by the way, not only is water connected to health issues, it also has its implication on education in itself. So, I mean, when you think about school children and how they get the chance to, you know, do all the things they've taught them about water, is there even water in the schools? What does the data say about water in the schools?
Before we talk about the water family, I mean, I just need to mention that for me, this is also a personal area, because during the time of military regime, when I was in uni, this particular water issue affected us, and it was clear that we needed a water treatment plant in the university. And we, the student leaders at the time, engaged the vice chancellor, the military governor, and the minister of education. And they were nonchalant about it. So, of course, we had to lead serious protests, because people were sending their children to uni to study, and the children were being returned to them in coffins. And we are not going to have any of it. And you won't believe that in what was then described as the premier university in Nigeria, it took 2.5 years of protest to get a water treatment plant, which at the time cost about 27 million naira, and which we are told there was no money for. And I mean, it was a disaster. You know, lecturer students who spent half the time they should have spent studying, going about looking for water, carrying jerry can on their head. You know, if you don't have a car, well, only the lecturers had cars, very few students had cars. It just disrupted, you know, people that needed water for their work, say in a Greek faculty, you know, health sciences, there was no water. And that was for the academic study, not to talk of the general, you know, survival of the campus. So, I mean, that was one of my, you know, one of my worst experiences
on
the impact of water on education. Having to campaign to a vice chancellor that came from the College of Medicine. Having to explain to a vice chancellor from the College of Medicine that a university needed clean water. I mean, can you imagine how? So this problem didn't start today. It didn't start today. So if you look at what the data is saying now, only 1 in 3 schools have access to basic water supply. Only 1 in 3 schools. And by the way, let me just mention that for our efforts in getting that water treatment plant, the military dictatorship, you know, responded by rusticating us from uni.
Oh dear.
You know, and you know, it took years. It took years in the law courts for us to get back on something that should have been clear to everybody, that you don't even need to raise one hand to say, excuse me, the water is important there. So it also demonstrates to you not only the nonchalance, but, you know, the almost, you know, I don't like to use words like wickedness, you know, because you can't really put a value to it. But when you have government that does not pay attention to the fact that schools need water to function, whether at primary, secondary, or university, it starts to give you an idea of the kind of policy making we have had for decades. Because this thing I'm talking about happened decades ago during military rule. So it really gives you an idea. So now only 26% of schools provide access to basic sanitation. In the urban area, slightly better at 38%. In the rural area, 22%. And in terms of toileting, the main type of toilet used in school is still pit latrine. If you can imagine that. And only 1 in 10 schools have on budget fund for maintenance of water sanitation and hygiene, which means if you go and ask them how much are you investing in water sanitation and hygiene, only 1 in 10 schools in Nigeria, just 10%, can tell you that this is the dedicated amount. So everybody is left to their own devices. So not only it undermines the effectiveness of our academic institutions at all levels, it also in particularly discourages girls from going to school. Because in a situation, the gender consideration is always crucial. Because when you have only roughly 14% of schools that have separate water sanitation and hygiene facilities for girls, for personal hygiene, menstruation and things like that, then you can see quite clearly that if it is a question of going from home and you are in primary or secondary school, you are in secondary school, for instance, which is when teenage girls within school, then what you have most likely that in that kind of period, the girls will not go to school. So if there are big tests being done, big exams being done, big practicals being done in secondary school, the girls are unable to go. Because there is nowhere for them to change and, clean up and do what needs to be done. So automatically they are disadvantaged from secondary school. And in fact, in many universities as well. Because this experience I was saying that I had as a student leader under military regime, when we went to consult with the female students, it was a big issue. Because no water in the hostel, no water in the toilets were a mess. It was messing up their academic, experience.
And it's one of the reasons why students in institutions in Nigeria still bathe openly. They can't use the bathrooms provided because of the hygiene situation. The female hostels, I know, excessively wake up early. Ladies, they wake up early to have their bath in public and open spaces because of the hygiene conditions.
We didn't experience that, so.
Mr. Sakore, there are many.
My generation did not experience that.
There are many updates now.
It's getting worse.
Yes, it is. It's worse off now than before. Oh dear. Well, just talking about how it affects education and gender and the provisions that there is with, 40% of schools with basic gender-sensitive water supply and sanitation services, it leads one to think about the very importance of water as we have it now. Before we even talk about one major area, which would be health facilities, 3 weeks ago, thereabout, the Minister of Water Resources, as we have it in Nigeria, he was explaining that 166 projects, including 38 irrigation projects, 37 dam projects and others, after they did the technical audits in 2016, they said, we know we have high, medium and low priority on how to revive some of these projects and even to complete some of them, but that they inherited quite a number of abandoned water projects as we have it in Nigeria. Now, we're in a situation more than ever before where water is almost it is the lifesaver when it comes to health. We're dealing with cholera outbreak right now. Then there's need for communal response with regards to communal and cholera outbreak, and how that affects maternal child and health. I can only start to imagine when diseased water or infected water rather is being used to bathe babies and the likes of that. At a time as well, combined, well, doctors are on strike. I don't know, on access to water, at this very critical time in health facilities, what's the story of what we have? It looks like it's a very dark story.
Well, sadly, this is one of the reasons why the doctors are on strike. I mean, the government keeps on making it, you know, look like it's only about salary and allowances, which in itself is bad, because you cannot be owing doctors salary and allowance and expect them to focus on their job. I mean, when they go home, they will, I mean, you know, their children will be starving. I mean, they have basic needs that they can't meet, but you expect them to continue in the spirit of goodness. So, I know many doctors. In all my work on the Millennium Development Goals and the Sustainable Development Goals since 1999, the health section is the one I have interacted with the most. I did a lot of work for the Global Health Workforce Alliance based in the WHO in Geneva. For many years, I was on the board of the African Platform on Human Resources for Health. And I led a big campaign for health investment and financing across Africa, making presentations at two heads of state summits, six health ministerial summits across Africa, four finance minister summits. The campaign was chaired by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, the South African Nobel laureate. So this is an area that I'm very familiar with. So you can't have a situation in which doctors are not paid for months, and then you sign agreements to pay, and then you do, you know, then that agreement is not met. And the Minister of Labour and Employment, a doctor, does not know that we don't have enough doctors in Nigeria. I mean, everybody will remember that horrendous interview he granted to Channel TV, saying we have more than enough, they can go, and they will be sending remittances. We don't have more than enough. For our population size, Nigeria is short about 460,000 doctors. We are short already. So when you have 35,000 doctors working abroad, out of, so we have, in all, Nigeria has trained less than 80,000 doctors since 19th independence. And 35,000 of them are abroad already. And you can see what is happening with the recruitment from Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yes. That was interesting,
yeah,
to see.
So, I mean, so this is the impact. I mean, there was one young lady who was at that recruitment saying she was, you know, she felt bad when she turned up at the recruitment center and met one of her best teachers from the College of Medicine. One of her best teachers, a pediatrician, was there, and she was like, so what hope is there? So not only is the poor water sanitation and hygiene having an impact on the health services, the absence of it means that the medical personnel we have are tired. They are tired of having to, remember at the beginning of the program, I was explaining that poor water sanitation and hygiene is a significant cause of death for new babies and mothers. So how can the doctors and the midwives be explaining to people that, you know, your wife, your mother, your sister died as a result of poor water sanitation and hygiene every week? That is why your baby died every week. Or the fact that diarrhea is one of the leading causes of child mortality. Or the cholera we have now. So, you know, obviously all these things have an impact. All these things have an impact. So 55% of our health facilities have access to basic water. 55%. Why? Why? In the place where it should be 100, it's 55%.
Why? What kind of planning and budgeting is that? Eh? 17% of hospitals don't have any water at all. At all. I mean, people have to be improvising, buying it, you know, they resupply and all kinds of things like that. Yeah? When you talk of toilets, at least 25% of our health facilities in this country have no toilet on the premises. What is that? Eh? One in five, that is 20%, have access to hand washing facilities. What is that? Hand washing at the core of public health. Eh? At the core of public health, only 20%. One in three, that is about 33%, have access to hand hygiene stations with soap and water. What is that? Where it should be 100%? Soap and water should be 100% in all health facilities. And we are talking of 33%. Why? Eh? And if you go to all the health facilities across the country, only 20% can say that they have clear budget line for water, sanitation and hygiene. And this is how much they spend. Why? So this is why the doctors are leaving, and not what I said. We are at a deficit. We should have over 500,000 doctors in Nigeria for our population size. If anyone follows me on Twitter, you will see I talk about all these things constantly. Even last week, tweeting about, these are the numbers of doctors we have in Nigeria. These are the numbers that have left. These are the numbers of Nigerian doctors working in the UK. These are the numbers of Nigerian doctors working in the US, and so forth, so that the data is clear. So the data is clear. If you want to look at it, I'm on social media at my name. It's at Rotimi Sankore. Just have a look and see. So, you know, it's extremely painful. It's extremely painful, especially when the Minister of Employment is a doctor and does not seem to know what is happening in the sector. It can't be any more embarrassing than that. So this is the situation that we have in the health sector. And we really need to look at it. Not just at the federal level, state by state. State by state. You know? I mean, if you look at the number of doctors we have in some states, it's as if there is zero health capacity there. You know? States that should have, for instance, 100,000 doctors have 2,000. I mean, a state like Lagos. States that should have 40,000 doctors have 90 or 100. Why? On top of all the problems we have. So, you know, all these things like water, sanitation and hygiene should be, you know, the policy and investment should be 100% to minimize the impact on the health sector, because not only does the water, sanitation and hygiene create more patients for the health sector already does not have enough personnel. So that is the last place where you should have all these 25% access to soap and water. I beg, Sammy, you know, sometimes,
I know, but let's with that move on to the part where we'll talk about the government policies and investments. What are they doing to invest in when it comes to water, as we have it, to improve water sanitation and hygiene in Nigeria? If we could just run through that, you know, some of your ideas around that, and what the citizens as well should do, so that we get to listen to some of our dear friends as well who want to join the conversation. But let me allow you to react to that. I mean, you've also made your recommendations as you raised points, you know, with regards to issues on ground, what the government needs to do, meeting of commissioners of water resources, resources, alongside with the means of water resources, and the classic response. But maybe you want to elaborate more on that, and what the government should do, what the citizens as well should do.
Yes, Femi, I mean, to put it in summary, so that, you know, we can also listen to, you know, to our listeners. So, first of all, like I said, the federal minister responsible for the water sector has to up his game. He has to look at the, I mean, most of this data I'm talking about here is official data. I mean, some of it is mine because I'm a development specialist.
Mm.
So some I've been able to put together, but most of it is official government data. So he will have it at his disposal. So the first thing he needs to do is to map the sector and then go to the cabinet and then say, this is the implication of this deficit on our health, on our life expectancy, on our industrial output, on our power supply. This is the implication of that deficit in all these sectors. This is how much I need to fix it. That's what the Federal Minister of Water Resources should do.
Mm.
Then you should call the Commissioners of Water and say, these are the deficits the federal government has identified in your state. Like I said, they are not all in the same party, but they are in the same country. So he has to lead and say, these are the deficits in your state, and by our computation, this is how much each of the states needs to invest to match the federal government. That's the basic first step. Then the investment has to be made in the capacity for the water. Because the water treatment plants that are needed, for instance, they have to be maintained, they have to be furnished. They need personnel, they need water engineers, they need chemical engineers, they need microbiologists. You need to build the pipe across city, you know, through urban areas and so forth. It needs planning. The waste management side of it has to be taken care of as well. So, you know, there is a cluster of ministers that need to be working together. Water, health, environment, and so forth like that. When last did they have their own cluster meeting? When last did they have their cluster meeting with the commissioners? In fact, I would go, I mean, given the scale of the disaster, I would say that in fact, they shouldn't even leave it to the commissioners to call the local government officials responsible. They should convey all of them into a kind of national summit and say, so this is the big picture. This is what each of you should be doing. And this is our three-year plan to sort it out. This is how much is needed. We need the counterpart funding from the state, from the local government. It, you know, it is this lack of coordination and planning that opens up the gap for corruption, and people just chowdering the money left and right, and the citizens bearing the consequence. So the main recommendation is map, identify the deficits, coordinate, identify the amounts needed for investment where state, federal, local government, and give everybody marching order. This thing can be fixed in 3 or 4 years minimum.
Mm.
And this means coordinating with marketplaces, schools, individual health facilities, and so forth like that, to make sure that the toilet facilities are there, the sanitation facilities, you know, the water and everything. This whole thing can be sorted 3 years max. So that's the summary of my recommendation.
Mm. All right. All right. Let's get on to the citizens. I mean, what some of the ideas the citizens could also work with?
Well, I mean, for citizens, it's just public education and awareness. Because if you look at, for instance, newborn health, I mean, many citizens used to need to know, for instance, that new babies don't need to drink water. Breast milk will provide everything. It will provide the water. It will provide the nutrition. So not only do they need to drink, not only do the babies not need water, when you go and give the babies impure water, this is what raises our under 5 mortality to almost 1 million a year.
Hmm.
So in terms of citizens, what is needed generally is public education and awareness, which is also, again, a government responsibility. What is the Ministry of Information doing with each sector? The job of the Ministry of Information and the minister is not to respond to every criticism of the government. That's mainly the work of the party in power.
Mm.
The main work of the Ministry of Information and its leader is to coordinate with all sectors of society and economy to do the necessary public education and awareness for well-being. In this case, water, sanitation, and hygiene. When last did we see the Ministry of Information at the federal or state level out with this kind of information? Even for just basic hand washing, they only talk about it when there is Ebola or COVID. So the citizens have a big role to play, but they have to be empowered with the information, especially given that we have notes. We have 60 million citizens unable to read or write. Unable to read or write. 60 million. So the information has to be put out, koro, in every possible way, every language, every situation.
In every situation. Easy to read, easy to understand, and of course implement. Mr. Sokore, let's take us a few calls this morning, but we have a week-long conversation coming up from Monday through Friday, 1 to 2 o'clock, so people can also still hinge on that and join the conversation when we get there. But let's take a few calls this very morning as we, based on our discussion, and our special series on water as part of the World Water Week, okay? The numbers remain 07-00-951-0000. That's 07-00-951-0000. Let's take your calls in. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Femidi.
Yes, you're welcome.
My name is Abubakar. I'm calling you from Gwagwalede.
All right, Abubakar.
Good morning, our guest. Thank you just for saying a lot on this topic. You have through a lot of insight. But there are certain factors militating against issue of achieving general sanitation, personal hygiene. Apart from creating awareness, there must be enforcement. Yes. And on the part of our policy maker, camp planners, no provision. There are enough provision for where dumping of refuse will be sited, or the plot of land on the street are allocated for building, erection of buildings. So there's no space for dumping of refuse, and there are scarcity of water all over the place. That is the problem. Thank you,
Abubakar. So, well, collection of refuse would be more appropriate, not dumping of refuse in this instance. Okay, let's take on another call. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Dr. Femini.
Good morning. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Shola is talking from Central Area.
All right, share with us. Let's talk.
Thank you, sir. Your speaker, he said one thing that even encouraged and make me happy. When they are in school, they are fighting for infrastructures. They don't even fight for their pocket. But when you look at Nigerians today, if the stomach infrastructure is being set, they forget about anything again. That's the problem. In the local government, they say, are they not seeing that these things are not working? They are seeing it. But the most Nigerian, most masses, most general public, they are concerned about what is going to enter their pocket. They meet the senator, they meet the governor, they meet the local government, but they are not asking for infrastructure. They are not asking for those things. They are asking for what they are going to take home. That's why many things are like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as Abubakar said, there must be enforcement. My father is called Woli Woli, who is a sanitary inspector. When Woli Woli is coming, it just be like maybe president is coming, do this. But nowadays, when there is no enforcement, anybody do anything, and those who are going to enforce the law, the corruption has already taken over them also.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Shola.
The doctor are shouting, we attend the clinic and hospital, which we are shouting.